1985 tube, which ordinarily has something like 100 watts of plate dissipation if you're blowing enough air through those external fins on the anode of that external anode tube. Let me drop. And so they can take a tube that's capable of 100 watts of plate dissipation and push it to 1,000 watts of plate dissipation if they circulate water through those fins. They change the mechanical layout such that water is literally flowing through that anode, external anode structure on this ceramic high vacuum, this ceramic high frequency microwave tube. And now, that water flowing through that anode, and the anode in some cases has got a lot of microwave energy on it. You don't want the microwave energy to be flowing through your water supply. So in some cases, they've got a plastic tubing supplying the water. You've got to make sure that you've got very pure water with very low salt content, so the water is not conductive. And the water itself in that plastic tubing, you might have that coiled together so that it looks like an RF choke where it goes back to the reservoir. There's all kinds of ways that you can flow water through a microwave tube, even though there is a 2,000 volts of B-plus on that anode and a whole lot of RF energy on that anode. And you want to make sure that that extra high-frequency radio as the 2,000 dB plus voltage on that, make sure that that's all not flowing through your water. And there's various ways of doing that. So you can cool pieces of tubing carrying high current by passing cooling fluids through the center of that piece of tubing. And if you're smart enough the way you set up the mechanics, you can have your cake and eat it too, so to speak. The skin effect is causing you to use tubing. The tubing is causing you to use a hell of a lot less copper, but still the heating that's being created, you're controlling it by pouring a cooling fluid through the center of that that tubing. Sometimes some very good designs occur in that manner. I'm not quite sure what the original question was. I think we've drifted pretty far left of center. I know that Dennis wants to make a comment on all of the above. NY2HF, K2LAW, go ahead, Dennis.
Thank you, Dick. I just had a question. Wasn't there an engineering student who tested a 9-volt battery subcutaneously and actually killed himself? Trying to get to the bottom of how much the person can stand actually died. And maybe it's a folklore, but I read it somewhere where you took a 9-volt battery, subcutaneously bonds inside, and disrupted his heart and died. Back to you, Matt.
In some cases, that can be an urban legend, but in some cases, it's real. How much voltage and how much current does it take to create electrocution? In the old days, when we used to study for the ham radio exam, we were told that a lethal amount of current is something like 200 milliamps. And I think they were talking about a condition where the current is flowing from your left hand to your right hand. At 200 milliamps, there's a moderately high capability of creating fibrillation of your heart, and if you're not being exposed to a defibrillator, you might die. Okay, the extreme case is in the case of a hospital doing a catheterization procedure. When you stick a catheter inside of a person's artery, because you're doing something like an angiogram, and the material you're pushing down that catheter might be a saline solution, which is highly conductive, and you're pushing that catheter into the person's arteries that go to his heart, and if the grounding of your instrumentation is improper, so that a few microamps of current at a few millivolts of voltage happens to flow down that catheter while that catheter is in the center of your heart, there is the possibility you can send the person in fibrillation with millivolts and microamperes if you do it at that very sensitive place inside the heart itself, very close to the structure that's doing the timing. So, how much current and how much voltage is required for electrocution? It's a huge difference of the conditions. During Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, salt water, an extremely conductive fluid, salt water has has a resistivity of 0.2 ohm meter. You take a 1 meter cubical plastic tank and you put a 1 square meter sheet of metal on the north wall and on the south wall, and you put your AC ohm meter between the two. With salt water in that tank, with a meter of difference of distance between those two plates, you will measure 0.2 ohms. Salt water is extremely conductive. By the way, it happens to have the exact same conductivity as the as your blood plasma. Hopefully coincidental, or Mother Nature designed it that way. So here's the salt water pouring into your basement. You've got your valuables in the basement, you want to recover them. So you go wading into that basement, and that salt water is rising to the place where it's starting to touch an electrical outlet, and current is starting to flow through that salt water. You might be 10 feet away from that electrical outlet, and the current is flowing through the salt water from where it's making contact on the north wall of your basement, and the oil tank is grounded on the south wall, and therefore current is flowing across that chunk of water that you're wading through. And your left leg is closer to one terminal, and your right leg is closer to the other terminal. And now that salt water, with meters of square meters of contact area against your skin, in that case, the actual voltage difference between your left leg and your right leg might only be a couple of volts. And in that case, you can be electrocuted. And something like 60 people died during Superstorm Sandy. A significant number of those people died in their basement, which what they thought was drowning. I'm convinced there's a high probability it was a...
Repeater, time out.
I'm convinced that a significant number of those people died from electrocution. And when you find a person who, because of electrocution, in the last few minutes of his life, when he was inhaling salt water because his muscles were not working correctly while he's in this water, and now if you decided to do an autopsy of that man who died, and you try to figure out, did he die from drowning or did he die from electrocution? And I think the answer is yes and yes. I think a significant number of people died from electrocution. The bottom line of this is, now that we've got a little bit more smarts because we've been through this episode, the bottom line is, if there's salt water or any other conductive fluid in your basement, of anything more than an inch of water on the floor, so to speak, and you go wading into that basement because you want to recover your past financial records or your family photographs, might be putting yourself at huge risk in a way that's not obvious. So be careful about voltages and fluids. If a high voltage line falls down onto the road and it's touching a puddle, and you're anywhere near the water of that puddle, even though you're 10 feet away, be careful. It's a very conductive fluid. So voltages and fluids and human beings, you'd be amazed how many times you're at the threshold of electrocution with, in some cases, very little voltage and very little current, depending on what part of the body it's conducting, what's the area, whether or not that part of the body is very conductive. Let me drop this.
Comment.
If with my two fingers on my left hand and my two fingers on my right hand, I grabbed the probes of my volt ohm milliammeter within the ohm meter scale, I might measure 100,000 ohms between my left hand and my right hand. I do the exact same experiment where I've now got a vat of salt water where I can put my left hand arm into it, and I put my right hand arm into a similar vat of salt water, and I now measure the number of ohms between those two vats, these metallic vats. I might measure 100 ohms. I can go from 100,000 ohms to 100 ohms when I'm measuring the resistance from my left hand to my right hand, depending on how you do it. The skin resistance, when your skin is dry, it's got a very high resistance. When you've now got your hand in salt water, my goodness, can you make conductivity and can you electrocute a person? So, could I, with a 9-volt battery, electrocute you by way of a catheter? Absolutely yes. I might not even have to do it with a catheter. In the worst case situation, if I have a chunk of metal pressed against your left-hand temple and a chunk of metal pressed against your right-hand temple of your head, and I put voltage between those two, I think a 9-volt battery could very well be at the threshold where you could really do some terrible disruption of that human being. Wes wants to make a comment on this. N2XJN, K2LA, that's declared, Wes.
Very interesting subject. First of all, part of his fairy tale. Natural. The current wants to go to the shortest path. Now, two resistances connected to get in parallel. If your resistance is many times bigger than the resistance of the shorter path, you're not going to be affected, or very little. The third. You have a bird on 36,000 volts, high voltage line, nothing is going to happen. So is you. If you were to honk with one hand, not two hands, on it, not for the long, nothing is going to happen to you. So, the bottom line is the shortest path. Now, if you think about the basement, floated, and then eventually ability, chances for you to be electrocuted, yes, that's true. Only the shortest part could be already shorted. So that would be how much the time it takes before the fuses will blow, or the main fuse from the transformer will blow, because it's going to happen everywhere. Now, that's true only if we don't deal with the high voltage. If we deal with the high voltage or 220 or that is coming to the house. Now, you write about it that if the high voltage line fall down, you have a step voltage. So as long as you actually jumping on one leg, you may have a chance to save yourself. Never put two legs. And to you.
NY2HF for the comment.
Yeah, Dennis recognized. Yeah, you have to complete the path for the current to flow. A bird sitting on a high voltage wire is relatively safe. I've watched a large crow-like bird sitting on a line that I think was a 36 kilovolt line outside of the factory where I was working in Deer Park, and he was perfectly safe until he decided to take off. As he started to take off, and because he was sitting on the wire very close to a high voltage insulator, his wing flapped down and bridged the gap across the high voltage insulator. I heard this very large sound that sounded like a firecracker, and that bird died at that instant. He completed the circuit, if you know what I mean. So, there was a YouTube video of a guy who was standing on top of a railroad train that's electrically operated in India, and he reached up to the high voltage line. His feet was on the metal roof of the railroad train, and his hand, he was walking across the wire, so to speak, and as he was swinging back and forth, walking across the, with his hands, he was hanging from this high voltage line with his hands, and his feet touched the metal roof of the railroad train, and he died very fast. So completing the circuit is part of the equation of how you create a lot of damage. So be careful of being in conductive fluids like water and seawater around any kind of voltage, and just something you've got to, there's a hidden danger there that's not obvious at first. You think you could go waiting in your basement to replace your, to recover your valuables. It may be a very poor decision. You may have to give up those valuables if you know what I mean.
Repeater, time out.
Anyone?
CT's here with a comment.
Okay, we got three people lined up. Dennis was the first one. NY2HF, go ahead, Dennis.
Thank you, Dick. I just wanted to thank you and Wesley for your really comprehensive explanation. Great. You know, fantastic. You actually enlightened me on a lot of things. Thank you, and we can go on to the next comment.
Yeah, there's a lot more hidden danger of water than first meets the eye. If there's any kind of voltage in that water, like people have been dockside where a party boat is plugged into stateside power and there's some kind of a leakage between that stateside power and the salt water that's floating that boat at that dockside, and somebody goes swimming in that hot water alongside of the boat. We've heard people who have run into a condition where they could sense the current flowing through their body while they're swimming in the salt water a good number of feet away from the boat, which had some kind of a short circuit between dockside power and, let's say, the keel of the boat. Another thing you got to be careful about is that you've parked your automobile at dockside. You're watching people fishing. And if you really want to think about the future of staying alive, you better make sure that the windows are rolled down in the car. Because if anything goes wrong, where you make the mistake of putting it in reverse when you think you're putting it in forward or whatever, and your automobile goes off the side of the dock and starts going into the water, the only way you're going to get out of that automobile is you're going to have to swim out an open window. Your first response might be, with common sense, I'm going to roll up the windows to keep the water out. You do that and you're going to drown. Arnold Schwarzenegger wouldn't be able to open that door with water pressure on the outside. So you got to worry about, are the windows open if you're near water, and if there's the slightest possibility that car is going to go into the water. Because if you can't swim out that window, you probably are not going to survive. The next person who had a comment on this was Hank, N1YDY, KQLIW. Boy, we're getting into wild subjects tonight, Hank. You got it, Hank.
Thanks, guys. And believe it or not, Dick, you actually went and addressed what I was going to talk about. I was going to talk about a dockside issue where I saw in the Dinner Key Marina, which is city-owned in Miami, a situation where their power box leaked into the marina, and somebody who was even wearing rubber boots was trying to clean out the water in the bottom of their boat and managed to get electrocuted. N1YDY.
Under normal circumstances, you would think those rubber boots would protect him. If there was the tiniest little hole in that rubber boot, where the tiniest amount of salt water leaked through the hole and touched his foot, now there's a conductive path between the salt water of the bilge of the boat that's being electrified and that human being. From his point of view, the rubber boots were doing their job, and he didn't sense a whole lot of water on his body. Only a little bit of it had to reach through that pinhole and touch his foot. There was a slim possibility that that might have been the mechanism by which he became electrocuted. What do you think, Hank? N1YDY, KQIW in the TechNet.
I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I wasn't physically there, but at the time that it happened, so I can't tell you what he did. But I do know I was there when the city actually pulled him out of the boat, and they figured he'd been gone for probably 24 hours by the time somebody looked for him. So I don't know the mechanism by which he passed away, but it sure wouldn't surprise me. Whitey White.
Okay, the next person on our list was Hal, K6DPZ. Go ahead, Hal, with your comment. Get your eyes up in the TechNet.
Good, you're very good. Yeah, I was just reading the mail. I just want to say we're involved in working with very high power transmitters and amplifiers. And the one rule I learned over the years is don't fear electricity. Respect electricity, number one. Number two, when you're making any measurements, always keep one hand behind you. When you're using a meter, connect one of your meter leads to your ground area, your return circuit, and only use one lead for making your measurements when you're working around high voltage. And by not having both hands or holding two test leads, chances of getting shocked or electrocuted are a lot less. And the other thing is, don't work with high power equipment with friends around you. Work on it by yourself alone. Stay 6DPZ, I got a phone call.
We'll work alone. Another comment.
Yeah, there's both pros and cons on that one. If you got a lot of friends around you that are distracting you, and you're paying attention to them and talking to them, and not watching what you're doing, you can get into a lot of trouble. That would lead you to believe you should be alone. Then again, when you're working with high voltage, just like when you're doing swimming or you're doing mountain climbing, you want to have other people around protecting you. If you slip off the side of the mountain and hit your head and you're unconscious, if you fall in the water and hit your head, with a friend around protecting you, calling emergency services if nearby, you're a hell of a lot better off. That guy who had to cut off his own arm because he went by himself into the northern Canadian area and climbed the mountain and slipped down the side of the mountain, and his arm got jammed between the two rocks, and he was jammed there for 24 hours. He didn't bring a cell phone with him by which he could holler Mayday. He didn't have friends who knew where he was so that they would be alarmed by the fact he hadn't come back. And the only way he could survive is he had to literally take out his Swiss Army knife and cut off his arm at the elbow in order to escape that situation. That's the disadvantage of being alone. So there's a lot of cases when you're doing something dangerous, you really want some people protecting you. Is that essentially what you're about to say here, John? KC2WGB, K2LAW.
KC2WGB, absolutely, Dick. Anything dangerous, you never work alone. Because exactly what you're saying, that, you know, they don't have to be talking to you, but just be present to pick up the phone or whatever you need to get that help there, because the quicker you get help, the better your chances are. But, you know, anybody who's experienced working with dangerous things know you never work alone on any of that. And, yes, you're right about shore power. Very dangerous. Our shore power was up to, like, 1,600 amps at 480 volts going through those ships, and there were some issues there. So you do have to be very careful.
Let me go there for a minute there, John. Some of those really big ships that you've worked on, they've got a metallic hull, and in some cases, I guess there's a great big cable going over to the shoreside power, powering that boat. I guess you're in the process of maintaining the engine that has the generator on the ship, and because the engine is not running, you need electrical power to run all the stuff on the ship, and you're running on shoreside power. And if any leakage occurs on any of the equipment on that ship, you now could be pouring a significant amount of current through that metal hull into that local seawater. And I bet you've had some funny experiences along those lines. Give us a couple of examples of my guess as to what could happen in that case, Sir John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Well, in the large, the MSTS ships would have tremendous freezers and refrigerators in there for supplies, and in there would be all of the food for the Navy, stuff like that, and those freezers have to run constantly. When the generators are working, fine, but if they fail, they switch over to shore power. Now, many of them had four what they called joy plugs. Each joy plug will handle 400 amperes, three phase, feeding the ship. And we had situations where water got into the joy plugs and smoked them up and melted those cables like it was nothing. But as you know, like Wes said, the fuse will blow. No, the fuse has to blow when it reaches the limit of the breaker. If you have a 300 amp burn read and the breaker's at 400 amps, it'll burn all day. So the breakers don't trip that easy. So, yeah, you got to be very careful with shore service, absolutely.
John, is there a way that when you're feeding shore power, you can be using the equivalent of a ground fault interrupter? If there's a mysterious path between the so-called hot weed and the seawater, is there a way of sensing that and therefore trip the equivalent of a ground fault interrupter? Or at these extreme power levels, do you no longer have that ability? Over to you, John, K2RIW.
There were no GFI circuits on these because of the tremendous amount of current and the slight leakage current between, like, hull and seawater. It would give it a false indication. They may have them now, but when I was working on the, the latest one I worked on was built in 91 or 92, and that did not happen. So, yeah, you just have to pay attention. Very, very cautious stuff.
Okay, we've got two people who want to make comments. One of them is Wes. I'll go ahead with your comment, Wes, K2LAW.
A few things. First, the indication of the current of the water, current drain for the water is H2O. So if the water is H2O, now when you put the, you can do the test, take your battery, put a tap of water and put the salt in it. As the water is going to get brown. Immediately it's going to get brown, and you're going to see the bubbling. The bubbling is 2H and 1O, so hydrogen oxygen. That's definitely an indication of what's happening. Let me drop. Now, by that, you will be able to exactly see the plot. John is right. The main breaker, if it's 300 arm, it takes a little time. But you got to understand one thing. If the current of more than 300 is going to flow through that breaker, it's going to burn immediately. 500 amps whatsoever. And it's happening because it's not only shorting through your body, but it's shorting to the shorter spot. So most of the circuit breakers actually are being blown. But that's my opinion. We don't agree always with you, but we like each other. Now, in the special forces in Poland, for a very specialized troops, there was a training. One of them was typical, which was throwing the grenade. Could you be killed with it? Definitely, you could. But there was a test jumping on one leg. And actually, it wasn't kicking. We were taught how to switch the leg when you are on a high voltage field. And yes, specially prepared the field, and the salt water actually spread over lead and very much controlled current. The voltage was high. Could you be killed, of course. But anyhow, my suggestion is don't jump on one leg when you have a high voltage line fall down. But switch legs. Never put two legs. Then I save yourself. Now, as far as the boots, I have a problem with that. It's not the hole in the boots. The boot is wet, there is a current flowing through the wet. But the guy died because he was trying to do something with the hands. Otherwise, probably his private parts will be affected only. The current goes only to the shortest part. It's not that your body is going to be paralyzed completely. And to here. Oh, by the way, another thing. When you get electrocuted, just remember, bend your legs. Because the muscles are paralyzed. But when you are able to bend your legs, nothing is holding you. That's what it's holding is just your illusion. You just fall down by simple gravity rolls. Enter here.
Yeah, that's a good
AIW comment.
That's a good one to remember. Be willing to bend your legs to get away from it, even if you can't release your hands. There's a person who wanted to make a comment, sir. Please give me your call letters and your name, sir. K2RIW.
Victor Echo 3, Juliet, India, Whiskey, Jim.
Hey, Jim, from the Golden Triangle of Canada. Please give us the benefit of your wisdom on this subject, Jim. Go right ahead.
Know that you're definitely getting the Golden Horseshoe, Nate, because the Toronto, Mississauga area has one machine on and Hamilton has another, so at least two that I hear with my local radio. Anyway, sister has a boat down in Florida, a public marina, 30-something foot boat, shore power generator. Utility's feeding you power. If you bring the power in to that boat and you put in, there's going to be an electrician who's going to pipe up. They're sometimes called 208 or 220, or they're a transformer where you can feed the 110 or 220 in and you get 110 or 220 out. Now, if you don't follow the NEC and bond the grounds through your system, would you not then have 110 volts that the secondary that's isolated, you do not want an auto transformer, the secondary that's isolated has a ground lug that you would terminate to the ground plate on the boat? I'm going to drip. That is question one. And question two, the people in the boat are clamping car booster cables to something metal on their boat and throwing the other end of the booster cables into the water for non-engineered lightning protection. A whole lot of people at this marina are doing this. There's a storm, and they've got jumper cables that they clip on somewhere on the boat and drop over the side. I'm thinking that their ground plate may not be the best in a boat. A ground plate in a boat is a very porous piece of metal with a lot of surface area that's on the outside of the hull with the ground wire to the electrical in the boat. But I'm just thinking what transformers were. Back to net from the E3JIW, yes, in the Golden Horseshoe.
Yeah, I had misremembered it as Golden Triangle, the Golden Horseshoe area of Canada. You brought up a very interesting point. Whenever you're running on dockside power, the safest thing I can think of is to use an isolation transformer. The fact that your ConEd and your Loco and whatever, one of their leads is grounded and the other lead is hot, so to speak, and if that hot lead touches your body and your other part of your body touches the water, which is ground, you've completed a circuit. If that circuit goes through a one-to-one isolation transformer that really has a thoroughly separated primary and secondary winding, you pick up a hell of a lot of extra safety. I didn't say it's completely safe, but you pick up a hell of a lot of safety. And if now, on the far side of that isolation transformer, you now put the leads over the side in order to get good what you think RF grounding for your radio antennas, I think that's a relatively safe situation, but I'm not positive on this. But I'm beginning to think that anybody who is running on dockside power should, if at all possible, be doing it through a well-made isolation transformer. However, when you're running the kinds of powers of the zillions of kilowatts that you've experienced, John, I'll bet you there's a lot of trouble finding that isolation transformer when you need it. KC2WGB, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Well, as Jim very well pointed out, if you do not follow the national code, which is you must ground transformer on the secondary side by rules. Okay, but don't forget this also. All of the ship wiring and connections are grounded internally in the ship or in the boat. That also goes back to the engine, which is coupled through the transmission to the monel shafts, to the props, the wheels, the propellers. So you automatically have contact with the seawater. Now you take some of the dizzy boat owners that are on the dockside. What people don't realize is they drop the extension cords in the water. You see it all the time. And sometimes you'll see a little bubbling going on there, whatever, but nobody pays attention to it. It's very dangerous working with shore power. You've got to be paying attention all the time. But if you had an isolation transformer like you're describing, and the insulation between the two transformers is sufficiently high to prevent any type of arcing, sure, that would be safe. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
Then one, Whitey White.
Yeah, Hank recognized, whenever you got voltage in water, boy, you got to be careful. Any kind of voltage in any kind of water and a human being involved, the isolation transformer gives you a lot of protection. But even with that grounded secondary winding of the isolation transformer, I can see ways that you still could have current flowing through the human being where his feet are in water and his hands are touching something that's got voltage on it. So the isolation transformer gives you a lot of protection, but boy, voltage and water in humans, really a bad combination. Got to be super careful as I see it. Well, let's see how you operate in this environment, Hank. N1YDY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thanks for recognizing me again. I agree, obviously, with everything John said, and I certainly don't have his experience with larger ships. But in the recreational market, we have a bunch of boaters that have their boats in marinas. Even if you have the isolation transformers, you don't know what's going on in your neighbor's boat, and that's really part of the issue. So you can do everything right in your boat, and if your neighbor has a really poor dock connection, or they've dropped the end of their shore power cord into the water at some point and then just tried to clean it off without thoroughly disassembling it, which you can do at the recreational scale. I mean, it's not rocket science. But if you get somebody who's at all lazy or ignorant of how to handle it, the guy can be three boats away, and he can still create a problem that could affect you on your boat. And so you still have to be very careful in recreational levels, which are much lower voltage. I mean, you know, you're talking 220 max as opposed to, and you know, I don't want to say dual phase, but you know what I'm saying, it's 220 or 110 volt circuits that are combined to get to the 220. But anyway, it's, even though it's smaller in every way than the professional stuff, it's still just as dangerous.
Hello. signs in the TechNet a few weeks ago told us he was swimming at a dockside, and as he got near a boat, he could sense current flowing through that water, and he was smart enough to turn around before he got too close to it, where he could have gotten in trouble. Someone else wants to make a comment? Who was that? K2RIW in the TechNet?
Let's see. Have a problem to understand it. Maybe John would be able to help me out. You have a boat. You have a generator. Your boat is grounded, but you say, okay, through the isolation transformer, whatever. Now, the heart of that 110 volt, 220 volt is in the water. What is the circuit completed or not completed? What is the winch of the sensing the current? I mean, something is wrong here in this picture. John?
Can I take it, Dick?
You got it, John.
Okay, now, are you talking about a generator that is on board the craft or dockside?
That's the way that I understand Hank's comment. No, it's on the craft. Now, Dick added also the situation when the craft was passing by, guy in the water was feeling the current. You know, just doesn't pop. So you have, let's say, insulation transformer. You have a generator on the boat. The heart of that is in the water, so the other side is then isolated. What is the range? What is the range of that effect? What is the radius of the circuit? I mean, how the circuit is being closed, John?
Okay, I'll give you one quick way of doing it. Like I mentioned before, engine, the shaft, and the wheels, or the propellers, are one monolithic piece of metal, so to speak. They're all attached. And then you have the exhaust mounts that are in the water. Okay, so there's all the metal contacts. Now, in the ship or in the boat, you have the neutral connected to all of the grounded elements, including the charger, the body of the engine, the chassis, all of that stuff. Okay, now you get a cord hanging over from the supply of the 220 volts or 110 volts. Now you have a swimmer. Let's say it's a fiberglass hull. He's swimming toward that boat. The cord is hanging over on the starboard side. He's swimming to the starboard side. And the current path is from the cord to the prop. Get into that current path, it can kill you. That's only one way. I mean, there's so many ways. Like Dick said, when you're dealing with water, salt water, the ocean, it's highly conductive and can kill you very quickly, especially if you're totally submerged.
What is the radius, John? 0.3 ohm per meter of the water, right? In the shortest part, are we talking that at the thumb point we have a bigger resistor, resistance, so this generator is not going to blow up immediately? And that part is actually perfect conductor where the swimmer is actually trying to cross to. I mean, I'm trying to complete the path.
What you're completing the path in the scenario John is drawing with a power cord laying over the side with voltage on it, and the other side of the neutral or ground of that power source is connected to all of that metal of the ship that's in contact with the water. You've now got a path between the dangling power cord in the water and the shaft and the propeller that's in the water, and maybe there's 10 feet of difference between the two. And across that 10-foot length, you've got voltage, you've got current flowing. And the current just doesn't flow by the straight path. It flows by all of those curved paths also.
Absolutely.
You don't want a human being in that. Not too different from what happens where salt water is in my basement. The socket on the north wall is in the salt water. The south wall has got my grounded oil tank. And now across that path of water, there is 110 volts dropped across 10 feet. And you would say, oh, it's only 10 volts per foot. Well, when your left leg and your right leg, half a meter of area each is in salt water, and there's only 10 volts between your left leg and your right leg, and that current is now flowing through all of that area of your skin into the arteries in your left-hand leg, up to the heart, through the heart, back down through the arteries of your right-hand leg, you've got a huge, nasty path for current flow. Even though the actual voltage drop across the water is small, there is completed path, current is flowing through that path, and you're part of that path. You're a parallel to that path. Whenever there's voltage touching water, and there's a current path through the water, and a human being is nearby, you're in a fair amount of trouble from my point of view. Try to, if you've got half a brain, you avoid that situation like crazy. I know this is not, the actual circuit is not easy to see with the brief descriptions we've given, but any current flowing into water and a human being in that water is, in general, a dangerous condition. KQLIWC 10.
One more thing. I see it, yes, it could happen, only if that water is the conductor somewhere, there is a resistor. So that fiberglass, whatever, is the resistor, because if there is not enough or the impedance is whatever. If the current is too high, the generator is going to blow. It's going to be more dangerous because it cannot survive. So yes, I agree with whatever you say. If I'm crossing the path and actually I become a part of the resistance, and there is another resistor on the line, then there is a danger. If there is no other resistor on the line, the thing cannot work. It's not going to blow, it's not going to affect anybody. It's going to blow. I mean, it's going to blow.
This is 2YDG mobile.
Dick, that's only true in Wesley's world because, as you know, as I said before, but Wesley misunderstood it, the Able was burning at 300, 350 amperes, gloriously inflamed. The breaker was happy. It was a 400 amp breaker. The anticipator said, everything's normal. Breaker did not trip. Well, the same thing happens when you take a 25-foot cord, plug it into your boat 110 outlet, throw it into the water. There's no guarantee the breaker is going to blow, but I guarantee you there's going to be current. You've got a 20-amp breaker, you could have 10 amps current, 10 amperes flowing there, and you would have maybe 5 amps flowing to the pump. So that's where the danger is. It doesn't mean it's a dead short. It's just current flowing. So back to you, Dick.
Beautiful answer, John. Thank you very much. I got it.
Yeah, Matt, KC2YDT, K2LIW. Matt, you've done a fair amount of emergency first responder situations. I bet you you've seen human beings, voltage, and water, and that combination is at times pretty dangerous. I bet you've seen things like that. Over to you, Matt, over to you, K2LIW, the tech man.
Affirmative. Very simply, you know, if there's current going through and touching salt water, gotta consider it live and lethal. You know, it doesn't take a lot at all for the human body to be affected by current. If there's a slight little crack in the line or something for that nature, it'll still read, you know, normal because it has the water, you know, as conductivity and all that. So it'll still read normal, but you will definitely feel it. So my brother has a boat out in Sinicock, and there's actually a sign on his dock, you know, keep extension cords out of water at all times. If extension cord hits the water, call the fire department, because you really never know. And it doesn't take a lot at all to cause this. KC2YDT, back to net.
If your extension cord fell into the water, you're saying call the fire department. If you had the ability to unplug the other end of the extension cord where it's becoming powered, couldn't you do that to make it safer before you start going through the process of extracting that extension cord from the water? Is there a way that you, the private citizen, could make that a safer condition without you putting yourself in danger? KC2YDT, K2IW in the tech land.
Very simply, no. You know, the reason being, you know, that they don't want to rely on the citizen, you know, of having any knowledge of that whatsoever. They'd rather have a trained professional do it, even if it's, like you said, very simply unplug the extension cord. You know, they'd rather have, you know, the fire department respond and unplug it. You know, that they don't want any issues happening. And there has been issues in the past, Southampton Township, where they go to unplug it, and there's a good short, and then they end up getting electrocuted too. So, you know, that's the reason behind not letting the fire department.
Yeah, the bottom line I'm hearing from this is that any method of getting dockside power into your ship is potentially very dangerous. Do whatever you can to be double darn sure that no extension cords can ever be dropped into the water. But as I see it, anything you can do that you don't require connection to dockside power is worth seeking, because that connection between, let's call it loco or Con Ed power and your watercraft, any method of connection between those two, you can make it safer with an isolation transformer. But where's the isolation transformer? Where's the isolation? If the isolation transformer is located in your craft, and if something is wrong with the wiring of that isolation transformer, and if for some reason it goes underwater, what you think is a safety device might not be. Is on a well-equipped boating dock, is the isolation transformer properly sized and properly protected, and is it on the dock? Where is that isolation transformer usually located if it's there? Let me see if John's got an answer to that one first. KC2WGB, K2LAW, where's that isolation transformer usually located, John?
Dick, on the commercial, on private docks with the small craft, I've never seen an isolation transformer. I've seen the mounted heads and all that. I've seen transformers supplying those heads, but the secondary was grounded on the ones that I've seen. Now, maybe Matt has seen something different. I don't know.
I see. Matt, how do you believe that they're wired, if they're wired safely? KC2YDT, K2IW in the tech net.
KC2YDT. Well, what I see, you know, is they're on the end of the dock, and they actually have, you know, a boarded board to prevent the extension cords from going into the water. So they're actually on the building closest to the dock.
Now, the so-called extension cord, then, I guess, is the cord from my private craft over to that isolation transformer that's dockside. So, as I see it, I'm supplying the extension cord, and only when it's connected dockside am I powered. It's not the other way around. You're not reaching an extension cord from dockside and plugging it into your boat. Is that the way it's usually done, Matt? Over to you, Matt.
Affirmative, at least in Southampton.
Yeah, that sounds like the safer way to go. So the extension cord is coming from my private craft. It's not coming from dockside. Coming from dockside, I can see how it can potentially be a hell of a lot more dangerous. So anybody who's been listening to all this, be super careful. If there's any voltage anywhere near water, and you're anywhere near that water, think second and third time before you do anything. And make believe that water is live. If there's any voltage nearby the water, and you're in that water, you don't want your skin exposed to that water at the same time that there's voltage potentially exposed to that water. As I see it, a very dangerous situation. And I'm convinced a significant number of people died from electrocution by swimming in their basement as salt water was washing in, and they're in their basement trying to recover their valuables. their valuables were not that valuable, if you know what I mean. That was a poor decision due to a lack of knowledge. In many of these situations, if you haven't been trained, let me drop.
Private comment.
A comment, too.
Okay, I heard at least Hank and at least one other person. What was I starting to say? You would never think that when you're parking your automobile dockside and you're watching people fishing, you would never know how dangerous that condition is. It only happens a small percentage of the time, but if something goes wrong and your car goes into the water and you're in that car, without those windows being open, your chances of getting out of that car alive are not very good. I think the first person was N1YDY. Go ahead, Hank. K2IW in the tech man.
Guys, it's just that if you look at it from a strictly legal and, you know, control point of view, you show up with your boat to a dock, and you get out to the dock, you want to use your own power cord, your extension cord, as you call it, because that's the only way you can control the condition of the outlet and the receptacle on the boat, as well as the other end of the cord that plugs into the dock. One of the things you have to do is make sure that the dock provider has a good outlet, because a lot of times those things have gotten wet and they have arcing and burning, and that can actually take your power cord out with it if there's an arc there, or at least take the end of it out. And finally, at least in Miami and in the marinas I have experience with in Florida, the power is not, there is no isolation transformer on the dock. Excuse me. About that, isolation transformer on the dock. If there is one in use, it's usually maintained by the boat owner who shows up with his own and is therefore installed in the boat. And at least in Miami-Dade Key Marina, I can tell you that the power just comes right out the dock from the city grid, and there's no safety other than the breaker that's physically on the pedestal where you would put your power store power cord into. N1YDY.
Comment, Dick.
Yeah, okay, we have another person comment, and then John in that order. So you're saying in Miami, that dockside power that you are available, that's available to you, is coming directly, so to speak, from the local power company without an isolation transformer at dockside. That's something you've got to be rather careful with. Before we pick up with John, who is the other person that said they want to make a comment? K2RIW in the TechNet.
Kilo 1, Mike Julia, Mike.
Okay, Mike number 2, or is it Mike number 1? I think it's Mike number 2. Go ahead, Mike number 2.
Roger, Mike. Kilo 1, Mike Julia, Mike. Yes, some marinas do have their own dockside isolation transformers, and others do not. Some of the more expensive boats, they carry their own isolation transformers, and it's not because of safety, it's because you can get very galvanic coat. If you get, you know, a bad current path from the shore power to the water, you can do a lot of damage to your propellers and shafts and bearings. And thing is, some mentioned throwing jumping cables in the water. Sailboaters do that during thunderstorms because you do have ground plates in the water, and if their mast takes a lightning hit, the ground plate goes through the hull, it can do damage to the hull, so they try to divert the lightning strike through another path rather than use the ground plate like what it's made for, because it will do structural damage to the hull where the ground plate passes through. That's all. K1MJM, back over to the net. Thanks.
So, do you know of successful situations there, Mike, where a person has made auxiliary grounding other than the grounding plate in their sailboat in order to protect them from a lightning strike on the mast? Is there reason to believe that those auxiliary grounding techniques that they do outside of the hull have been successful and it's worth doing? Or is this just a popular theory that a lot of people are using? What's your guess on that one, Mike? Over to you.
I know several people who have, not several people, who have had their boat hit and done damage to the fasteners at the grounding plate. I don't know of anyone who's been hit while they've had a separate ground path into the water. But I do know people, and it's common, when your boat gets hit, often it goes to a steel keel or a unique ground plate, and
and they do have, you know, they do have problems because of that.
Comment in one way, Wayne.
Go ahead, Hank.
My boat had a carbon fiber mast, and it was extremely important to create a good ground plane, or ground circuit for the mast in a thunderstorm environment, because there was enough resistance, even with the jumper that ran from the mast to the keel, had a lead keel with stainless steel bolts that held it on, and, you know, a dedicated grounding post on it. But there's still enough internal resistance that what would happen is, if it's a lightning strike, it would drop or heat up the connections, and when the connections heated up, they would cause the fiberglass to spall. It was really dangerous.
When the connections heated up, it would cause the fiberglass to blank. Repeat that sentence, Hank, go ahead.
When you had a lightning strike, you had enough current going through, the connection would heat up, the water would boil, and the fiberglass would spall. That's a fancy word for meaning that the layers would come apart, layer by layer, the resin and the cloth, and, you know, create a hole.
And that hole that was so created could become a leak for the boat, is what I think you're saying. Is that true, Hank?
That's the theory, but, you know, again, I've never seen it personally. I just know that I've had alternate ground paths rigged, and it was something that was recommended by the manufacturer of the mast.
Is lightning striking the mast of a sailboat, is that a rare event, or is that an event that happens some number of times every season at a good-sized marina? What's your guess on that one, Hank? Go ahead.
Miami.
I think you said it happens very often in Miami, and Miami, I guess, is close to the lightning capital of the United States. The lightning capital of the United States, arguably, is Gainesville, Florida. Boy, they get lightning. I think every other day they get a lightning strike, but I guess Miami is close enough to get a hell of a lot of lightning, is what I think you're saying. Is that true, Hank? Go ahead.
That's my understanding. You know, I lived on the boat for 9.5 years. It's enough experience to have an opinion, but it's not enough to tell you that I'm an expert. So, you know, I can only tell you what I've seen other guys do and what I know works for me.
Okay, you've lived on a boat for 9.5 years. That means you've lived, I think, near a marina. Therefore, you talked frequently to other local boat owners. How often were any of those boats nearby you were ever struck with lightning? You know of specific cases where they were struck and significant damage occurred? Back to you, Hank.
I know of about 4 or 5 cases where guys that I know have had their boats hit. The definition of critical damage is what's in play here. You know, they could find the lightning path, and for most of the time, you know, in the marina at least, there was not significant damage. There was cosmetic damage, and there was damage you know, that needed to be repaired before the boat moved, but it was certainly not enough damage to put our 11 inside of the marina. There was one boat that had enough damage that I'm aware of, but, you know, it had to go to a yard as opposed to being repaired in situ in the marina.
Very good. I thank you for this information. I wonder if you have another letter we should read tonight. The choice is yours, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet. By the way, have we had any feedback from any of the previous so-called homework assignments of a long time ago? Back to you, John.
KC2WGB. Not as yet. Still working on that. No, it's after 11. I think it's time to go over to Paul to get some of his wonderful report, but I just want to let you know that in most well-maintained marinas and well-serviced marinas, they have the power box at each spot, and at that box you have a pigtail hanging down, about a foot or 18 inches, and on that is a large Hubble connector, which has 4 conductors, a ground, neutral, and the 2 conductors, and it's a twist lock type that's very secure. But as the boat is moving, it's not putting in any stress. It's not like it has a wall plug. It's actually a little pigtail hanging down. And they're usually well protected. And yes, some of the boats have their own isolation transformers for the cathodic protection and things like that. But it's still extremely dangerous. So we'll go over to Paul. That's it from the mailbag. And we'll see what happens. KC2WGB. Back to you, Dick.
And 2AO, quick comment.
And Rich, go ahead, Rich, with your
come in.
Okay, Dick. If getting back to the other stuff, if anybody within the sound of my voice is interested.